Back in 1981, I had the American dream, the beautiful wife, the house in the suburbs, and a beautiful six-year-old son. And one day I went to work, kissed my son goodbye, and never saw him again. In 2 weeks, I became the parent of a murdered child, and I'll always be the parent of a murdered child. I still have the heartache. I still have the rage. I waited years for justice. I know what it's like to be there waiting for some answers. And over those years, I learned how to do one thing really well, and that's how to catch these bastards and bring them back to justice. I become a manhunter. I'm out there looking for bad guys.
This is important. I want you to listen. It's no accident that God likens us to sheep. If sheep are left to themselves, they don't take care of themselves. They need a shepherd. Jesus said, "My sheep hear my voice, and a stranger will they not follow." They learn to trust the shepherd. And the word says, take care of the flock. The Lord is my shepherd. He makes me to lie down in green pastures.
Victor Bernard truly was the wolf in sheep's clothing. There is no God in any religion that says it's okay to rape children.
I would say I had never met anybody that I thought loved the Word of God as much as Victor Bernard did.
Victor was like 6'1", brown hair, kind of feathered back at the time. He was very dignified. I started to look at him as an apostle of Jesus Christ.
He was a pastor. He basically took personal care and people, invested into them, and tried to bring the best out of you.
River Road Fellowship was a small home fellowship. I think there was maybe about 10, 15 people. It was a lot of caring and a lot of love at that point.
It was very much about living solely for the Word, you know, not like being a Sunday Christian, where you just go to church, hear a little sermon, and then you don't think about it all week. It was more like living the Word.
Well, in the winter of 1995, 96, they first talked about getting a camp to bring people into the church.
So I think Victor just came up with the idea, hey, if anybody wants to move up here, we'll try to help facilitate you to move up here. And a lot of people did. I personally was the main pivotal person that worked with the zoning board and the whole process of the finances and the purchasing of the camp.
The River Road Fellowship moved into Northern Pine County and established the Shepherd's Camp. Pine County is situated about an hour north of downtown Minneapolis. So it is a very rural county.
We sold our homes, and the funds went into renovation and things that needed to be rehabbed. And we had one person who had his own construction company. Another one did heating and air conditioning and knew some things about electrical. I mean, we knew how to plant a garden and be self-sufficient.
We really had no contact with the group. They were very quiet, kept to themselves. Some of the neighbors would say that when they would have a worship day, they could hear the music coming out of the camp. It was always pleasant.
Victor Bernard came and visited my parents when I was 9, when we were living in Harleysville, Pennsylvania. He was traveling the United States trying to find believers, and we had church in our home ever since I can remember. So he gave my parents some of his books and teachings that he had done.
As the prophets spoke, they spoke of one.
They started listening to them a lot, and they were sending money to Victor.
And to whom is the arm of the Lord revealed?
My parents started making trips out to Minnesota.
In order to fulfill what was spoken, he was brought to Nazareth.
And then Victor drew the line that basically we either had to move out to Minnesota to join him and the believers out there, or we could no longer fellowship with them. And it was after that that my parents decided to move out to Minnesota. I'd never really been on dirt roads before. I was very excited. They had tons of animals. Sheep, chickens, rabbits, cows, pigs. In the beginning, it was kind of like summer camp. But I didn't realize at the time how many changes would be made and how many rules there would be once we moved out there.
These Thessalonians were believers. It was working with power. From them sounded out the word of the Lord. They were examples. They believed God's word.
It started out as a very good thing, where people got together and celebrated their belief in God. There was no indication that anything odd was going on there.
Victor Bernard did a teaching in the chapel to the whole church when I was 13. He said that in the Bible, all the firstborn children were supposed to be sacrificed to God. And he listed off 10 girls' names.
Renee.
I love you and thank God for you.
It was encouraged that the firstborn, if it was a daughter, that she would be in this group called New Maidens. Basically like virgins unto Christ. We kind of looked at them as maybe nuns.
Lindsay.
Thank you, baby.
I think I was so, like, shocked, you know, and didn't really know exactly what was going on.
When they basically became, quote, the maidens, with the whole, all 10 of them, I thought it all, especially the younger 5, that's what they wanted. They were something that they were seeking.
That's how they were choosing to live their life, being the firstborn.
When you're 12 and 13 years old, there is no mutual consent. I don't believe any of those girls would have had the ability or would have been respected if they said, I don't want to be one of the 10 maidens. I don't think they had any voice in the issue.
The day my parents dropped me off was July 23rd, 2000. I thought I was only going there for the summer. They gave me a gift when I left. It was a picture that said, they that sow in tears shall reap in joy, and then it was a tear bottle they gave me. And I remember them being very serious. When I got there, there was no playing, for sure. It was a lot of hard work. Like, each hour of our day was scheduled out.
And Victor was part of everything. So they sewed clothing for him, cooked meals for him, kept his house. You know, everything that a wife would do, they did for him.
He had taken off his wedding ring in front of a bunch of the believers there. His earthly marriage didn't really matter anymore. He didn't live with his wife. In the Bible, the church was the bride of Christ. And because he was Christ in the flesh, the church was supposed to be married to him. At that time, I didn't really understand the fullness of what it meant. I have been living at the Shepherd's Camp for a little over a month when Victor called me to the lodge. He, you know, asked me how I was liking the summer so far, and I told him that it was hard work, but, you know, I was doing okay. And then he proceeded to ask me if I had ever masturbated before. I was only 13. I didn't even know what the word meant. I hadn't had my period yet. And for some reason, he thought I was lying to him. He then slapped me across the face and got very angry. He told me that because he was a man of God and he represented Christ in the flesh, that it would be spiritual and natural for him to take care of me sexually. And that even though I would have sex with him, I could still remain a virgin. And I remember him laying a towel down on the bed because he said that I might bleed when he first. When you first have sex with somebody, you know, sometimes the person bleeds. And that made me even more scared. But even though I felt that it was wrong afterwards, I thought, because Victor said he was a man of God and he brought up those things from the Bible, that somehow it was okay or holy.
Jesus loves me, this I know.
After Victor had sex with me when I was 13, I didn't talk about it to anyone. I thought somehow, even if I didn't understand it, that, you know, if it's what God wanted, then I just had to, I don't know, maybe I deserve this.
Yes, Jesus loves me.
These young women, they only knew what he told them. His education was the Bible according to Victor Bernard, and he preached to these young women nonstop.
But here it says their faith was growing. What? That tells me something. That means that, listen, you don't stop growing and you're believing, people.
Victor told me that if I told anyone, I'd receive damnation from God. I knew bad things happened to people who didn't obey God. Sometimes God killed them or swallowed them with fire.
He's a manipulator hiding behind God. And people were very entranced and enthralled by this guy. But along the way, there were plenty of warning signs. There were lots of opportunities to intercede and say, in my gut, I don't think this is right.
Women were definitely not allowed to go out. Even within the property, we weren't allowed to just wander around by ourselves. I couldn't go down to the food room by myself. I would basically get yelled at.
We were never allowed to be alone with another man. We were never allowed to look at another person in the eyes, except if it was Victor. I'd seen him like spit in people's faces before. I'd seen him throw people out of the church. So I was constantly worried that I would make a mistake or mess up.
See, I had a relationship with him before where I would bring things to him and we'd talk things through and, you know, and so forth. But then, and it kind of happened very slowly, gradually, where, you know, you felt like you had no voice.
There was a phrase that they used in the ministry, and it was called lockbox. You just didn't talk about things that were told to you or that you saw or heard. If somebody told you it was lockbox, you just kept it to yourself.
I never talked about it with the other girls. But then one of the leaders had us read bedside manners and books on different sex positions. And it was after that that I realized Victor was having sex with all the 10 girls. After dinner, Victor would pull one of the girls aside, and then that girl would go to the lodge. If he thought I wasn't doing well spiritually, then, you know, sometimes he wouldn't have sex with me for like a month or something. But there were times it would be up to 5 times a month. January of 2001, Victor had a meeting with my mom and dad, and I was present at the beginning of the meeting. He told them that at one point he may decide to have sex with me, which he had already done. He went ahead to explain Jesus Christ said Mary Magdalene, that it was spiritual and natural.
The instinct, me as a father, unequivocally, I've got to protect my child, my son, my daughter is the number one obligation I have.
I thought that my mom and dad would see it as not right too, as I had thought it wasn't right.
But Victor Bernard is really good at manipulating people, lying to people, and getting parents to go against their natural instincts. He was able to say to parents, I'm thinking about having sex with your child. And you believe in the rhetoric that I'm trying to shove down your throat, that you're going to give me a pass.
And my parents, they didn't do anything to stop him. I just turned 14. Victor had a ceremony in front of all of our parents.
Daughters of the living God, royal gems of Jesus Christ, my sister, my love, my undefiled.
He would dip his finger in the salt and put it on my tongue. This was to signify us being spiritually married to him. He didn't come out and say it, but I would assume some people had their suspicions that he was having sex with us.
Your love for me is unashamed. You have ministered to me personally in different seasons and situations. Oh, my dearly beloved, my longed for, my joy and crown.
Did I have suspicions? Yes. It was the way it was done and the look between them that it was more of a look between lovers. But it wasn't something you could really, you know, put your finger on and say yes for sure, because, you know, you thought, well, I shouldn't be thinking that way. I shouldn't be having these thoughts. They're wrong thoughts. So they, you know, and leadership wouldn't do things like that. And those are the things you think, and that's what keeps you silent.
Nobody wants to accuse someone of sexual abuse. Could it be my priest? Could it be my minister? Anybody that can rape a child, they know how reprehensible their act is, and they're counting on you not to have the courage to do something about it.
Victor was a very close friend of mine. I was married, he was married. I felt that I could trust him. One day, Victor wanted to speak with me. We walked down together to his cabin. I had my guitar and we were talking about playing for God and how to do it with our whole heart. He wanted me to learn to play without any qualms. So he asked me to take my shirt off. He said, just play like I'm not even here. He continued to tell me about doing all things for God, not being so worried about my own appearance. So I did. I took my shirt off and I played a song, you know, and I remember still holding the guitar up and covering myself. And then he just kind of got closer to me and closer to me. He started hugging me, and then he would kiss me, and I'm still trying to kind of play. And then he picked me up and carried me into the bedroom. The last thing he said to me, he said, Dawn, don't worry about it. I've been fixed. And I said, what? He says, don't worry about it. You won't get pregnant. I was fixed.
She called me one day, and she didn't come out and say, you know, we had sex or I slept with him. But it's just something that, as women talking together, I picked up on it. I think it was the start of the biggest upset. Something gets in there and starts to undermine, and you can't keep everybody quiet.
One afternoon, Victor gathered all of the 10 maidens together. He told us that he had had an affair with Dawn Cook and another married woman from the church. He was telling us because he felt rumors would spread and he wanted us to hear it from him.
Victor told a few men, and I was there, that he had got involved with a married lady. And I started to see that it wasn't just an isolated situation, that it involved many, which obviously is a problem. My concern, though, was in being convinced that now single, you know, that the maidens were involved.
I started to come out of a fog, so to speak, of how things worked. I was cooking dinner, and I lied to my children, and I said, come on, we need to go down to the food room. There was a very bad storm, and I ended up driving like crazy to get away from there. Within 4 or 5 days, Victor had come searching for me. He finally got a number that I would agree to talk to him on the phone. And he talked me into coming back.
I felt 100% obligated. Something like this had to be confronted. Dear Victor, many things have caused me to review and consider our lives together for these past 15 plus years. You, on so many occasions, yelled, screamed, and warned us about not giving our strength into women, but you surrounded yourself with women and gave your strength into them. If this isn't the height of corruption and deceit, I don't know what is. If you won't confess this, then you leave me with no choice and to start making it known all across the country.
Beginning in 2010, male members came forward with allegations of sexual abuse of their wives by Victor Bernard, acting in his role as a pastor or a religious leader.
Thank God somebody was bothered by the fact that their grown wife was recruited to have sex with this guy, or possibly the children would have never been believed.
He was trying to sleep with every woman in the church. So you don't form a group that are called his maidens, you know, for what purpose, you know.
There was a rumor that there was a group of young girls that were these maidens, and then something may be going on. But no one was coming forward saying, I saw it, I know exactly what happened. And we certainly had no victims at that time coming forward saying, I'm making an allegation that he sexually abused me.
About 3 months later, I got a phone call from the sheriff that basically said, there's nothing and we can do about this. You know, it's just too, there's just not enough here to warrant doing anything more with it.
In late 2009, I was 22. At that point, David Larson had gone to the police. Victor had told us that there were people speaking evil of him in the church, and it was time for him to leave Minnesota. So basically, he was going into hiding. He took a bunch of the believers with him, and they eventually ended up in Spokane, Washington. Some of the believers moved to Wisconsin. Things started really splitting up. I took the train cross country to Pennsylvania. I did not tell anyone anything that had happened. I just knew that I wanted to start my own life.
Going to the grocery store was really hard for me. I couldn't look at people. I was just really afraid. My daughter was too afraid to even wear pants because she thought God wouldn't love her.
I didn't have any friends. I'd never had a job. Didn't go to college. I didn't even know what was in style or like how to shop for clothes. I'd never worn makeup before. I didn't even know about the internet, not even cell phones. Daily life was extremely overwhelming.
Lots of sexual abuse victims become drug addicts, alcoholics. They can't have a meaningful relationship. But every now and then, with that little bit of freedom away from the controlling, away from the manipulation, one of them breaks through and says, I have got to tell somebody till this man pays for it.
Well, it was the beginning of a new year, so I decided to tell my aunt and uncle what had happened out in Minnesota. That Victor had sex with me from the time I was 13 until I was 22. So for 9 years. They were really shocked. They asked me if I knew what Victor had done was a crime, that he had raped me. It kind of hit me all of a sudden how much of my life had been stolen from me.
The Lord is my shepherd. He makes me to lie down.
I finally realized that Victor is a monster. He's a rapist. He's definitely not Christ in the flesh. He's like the Antichrist.
So you came forward in 2012 and gave a statement. Shortly thereafter, a second female came forward.
It was huge for me that they had the courage, the guts, the determination to do the right thing, which was to come forward to help get this whole thing exposed and dealt with to what it is. And I just was told that they were going to grab him and arrest him.
We believe we had probable cause. Unfortunately, at that time, the county attorney chose not to press charges.
I don't know why they didn't charge Victor after I went to the police. I heard the people who thought the case could be charged didn't have the authority to go ahead and charge it.
The county attorney requested that we do more follow-up, more statements, added questions, and that we attempt to contact Victor Bernard and get a statement from him. In the fall of 2012, I sent our lead investigator out to Washington State in an attempt to track down Victor Bernard. The Washington State Police set up surveillance on several houses. At some point, suitcases were observed being loaded from one of the houses and then placed into a car. The suitcases were transferred several times. At some point, our detective approached the vehicle and attempted to talk with the driver, who refused to cooperate.
Victor did a good job of brainwashing people in to not talk to the authorities, to basically guard him, protect him, no matter what. They think they're doing the right thing by not talking about it.
I think the suitcases were en route toward the airport. We didn't have a warrant. There was little that the detective could do. We believe Victor Bernard had fled the state, possibly the country.
I'm the parent of a murdered child. I have no tolerance for people who wait to intervene in the exploitation of a child. I think the criminal justice system broke down and allowed Bernard the time, the wherewithal, and the ability to plan a run.
I'd gone to the police about Victor having sex with underage girls, and I was the first girl to speak up about it. But it felt like nobody was really doing anything about it. So I decided to write a letter to the senator out in Minnesota and some other congressmen, the president, and I explained my story in the letter and asked for their help. It had been 2 whole years of waiting for them to charge Victor. I thought that it was possible it would never get filed. After months, the local news in Minnesota contacted me through an email and said he had heard about the story and wanted to see if he could help with some media if it wouldn't help get the case rolling.
To his followers, Victor Bernard is a spiritual leader, but the Pine County Sheriff calls him a pedophile, plain and simple. And the ones who finally had the courage to come forward may have been his youngest victims.
And it seemed like after that aired, everyone seemed to be making it like a really big deal.
Good evening. I'm Nancy Grace. I want to thank you for being with us. Bombshell tonight. How did this happen?
There's so many remarkable aspects to this story, Nancy. These parents are, I mean, they have to be on another planet.
It took 2 years to bring charges.
This is a perfect case for prosecution.
They went to the media. That garnered a lot of attention locally on this case. Shortly thereafter, a criminal complaint was produced by the county attorney. I was thrilled. We have 59 counts of sexual criminal misconduct involving two juvenile female victims. It gives us the ability to go door to door to look for him, to have him arrested wherever he is found. There is nothing I would like better than to see this fellow sitting in my jail, awaiting his trial. The criminal justice system owes that to these victims.
I'm in awe of Lindsay. Nobody else could get anything done about this guy. No strong big men could get the criminal justice system to go hunt down Victor Bernard. And Lindsay did it while she was estranged from her family, out there by herself.
In 2012, I brought it up to my mom, what had happened in Minnesota. All she said was, "I know that mistakes were made, but I still believe Victor is a man of God, and I'm going to follow him." So, I feel like I hate them sometimes. I feel a lot of anger. I feel like basically I haven't had parents since I was 13.
These are survivors, and they're getting on with their lives. And I'm proud of them for coming forward. And I'm asking anyone else that has a similar story to come forward. Come forward and talk to us.
My daughter is still there. My eldest daughter is still there. My husband never left.
I still have two sisters, and my mom is still out there in Washington State, still believing this man who raped me when I was 13. I mean, at this point, I feel like they're brainwashed.
Everybody that was a part of this, we're all responsible. You lose sleep over it. Sometimes just you can't get it off your mind. To use God's name to say, you know, you're obligated to have sex with me because I'm a man of God. It just doesn't get any more disgusting than that.
I've talked to a lot of the young people. A lot of them don't even want to believe in God after that. And he stole that. He stole the innocence of what the church is supposed to be for people. For his own selfish gain.
I still have nightmares every night with Victor and the girls in it. But ever since I found out I was pregnant, it's given me something to focus what happened to me, I will never, ever let anything like that ever happen to her. I already know how much I love her and will protect her with everything that I have.